This is Melissa, and today is the 20th of July, 2025. I hope everyone is doing well. I want to apologize for the poor, terrible, awful quality of the audio on The Real History on Thursday. It hurt my ears, too. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened because my settings on my audio software do not appear to have changed, nor did the gain on my microphone. I use a piece of software called VoiceMeter Banana, and I have used it for a couple of years, and it's been satisfactory. And I have a microphone that is just the basic Yeti. I think the microphone was $30, including the stand, so it isn't a professional or even a, you know, podcaster-grade microphone, but like I say, I felt that it was satisfactory. But something happened recently where I was getting whistling and feedback, and I played around with the settings, and I got them so that on tests I wasn't having that, and I left everything as it was. And when I sat down to record and didn't do a test on Thursday and got back all that whistling feedback, it was terrible. I blame the cats. Somehow they figured out how to use the software. And anyway, hopefully this one will turn out all right. And I wanted to let you know that the Redux that I am bringing you is entitled The Deceit of Elite. A war declared by elite for November will begin in earnest in Red October. Such open treason, all should remember, put them on trial when chaos is over. And this was Alan on September the 6th, 2020. And I have use this as a Redux way, way back when. It was the 12th Redux, so a long time ago in May of 2021. I used a little bit. Now, I didn't check the total runtime of this. I didn't note it for you, but it won't be one that's over 4 hours because it was 2020. And Alan covers a lot of very interesting things in this talk. And just to give you an idea of the kinds of things that you could encounter if you listened to the whole thing, Mike up in Canada used a clip when he did one for the excerpt series, and he entitled it, Evil Needs Your Cooperation to Triumph. I had also included this in the syllabus for the book club where we're covering Alan Watts' Waiting for the Miracle. And just today, we had a, because I'm actually recording this on the 19th, we had an unrecorded chat, which was just amazing. These book club chats that we're having on Telegram are so good for me. They're very intellectually stimulating and interesting, and everyone has so much to contribute. So we covered there part one, interview 10, which I had titled The Beast 666. And of course, Aleister Crowley gets a mention there. And there were a lot of interesting things, but I had chosen this talk to go along with it. Because in this talk, Alan discussed Aleister Crowley. But there's so much more going on in the talk, and so I thought I would work from it. And as I started out, and I realized that as much as when you get into the talk, there's a lot going on, smart city projects, protests, UNESCO, UN, the Magi, calling down demons, psychopathy versus possession, the class system, fear of poverty, and on and on with very interesting things, internet surveillance, man pepper sprayed and arrested on train for not wearing a face mask, and police brutality. Polls show Australian public wants a COVID jail. So these are some of the things that went on during this talk, September 6, 2020. One of the things that Alan covered in this first section was a brief mention of China's Silk Road and the World Trade Organization and et cetera. So just to share a few things that are relatively new or very new on China's Belt and Road Initiative. This is something from Financial Times. China's Belt and Road investment and construction activity hits record. Rapidly expanding presence in countries signed up to Xi Jinping's global initiative contrasts with U.S. approach. So, again, they're doing compare and contrast. They're showing Donald Trump's tariffs and how that is affecting trading partners for the U.S. against this Belt and Road Initiative. And there's another interesting one from just a couple of days ago, and that is an interesting thing, is that China's Belt and Road Initiative is getting a lot of really current press. So I'll put these up for you. This one comes from The Hill, which is kind of Washington-centric publication. And it said, so forgive me if I mispronounce a place in China or elsewhere, but on July the 1st, a cargo train from Western China reached Chanse, Peru, a symbolic milestone in Beijing's quieter but sharper new global infrastructure strategy. As the Belt and Road Initiative evolves, ports, railways, and data cables are replacing fanfare with functional dominance. So they're talking about shipping a new port. I don't even want to venture saying this one, but I'll say Gangzhou Port has operated direct maritime routes to Chanse, slashing transport costs for Chinese and Latin American exporters by nearly 30%. With shipping times reduced, this once sleepy fishing village has morphed into a logistical pivot point and the latest jewel in China's infrastructure crown. Costco Shipping, that's without the T, it's not Costco, but Costco Shipping. And believe you me, just as an aside, the Costco, the simple kind of boxcar trains that went by in Esther, Sudbury, Northern Ontario, you wouldn't believe how many Costco boxes or crated pallets or box cars with Costco on the side that you would see going by. Amazing. So back to the article, it said Costco Shipping, which owns a 60% stake in the Chanse port, has positioned the terminal as a regional logistics hub that will handle more than 1 million containers annually by 2030. This is the new face of Beijing's global strategy, less about ribbon-cutting photo ops, more about rewiring the world. Over a decade since Chinese President Xi Jinping launched the Belt and Road Initiative, China has recalibrated. The era of splashy mega-projects is giving way to a quieter, greener, and strategically sharper phase. Smart ports in Latin America, fiber optic corridors in Africa, mangrove restoration hubs in Southeast Asia, all bearing the stamp of Chinese capital, code, and connectivity. Call it Belt and Road 2.0. It's smaller, but smarter, and it's winning influence where traditional diplomacy is absent or distracted. By 2023, trade between China and Belt and Road nations exceeded 19 trillion, according to Chinese state media. But numbers alone don't tell the full story. China's strategy today is as much about norm setting as it is about nation building. It exports standards, embeds surveillance tech, and retools the political grammar of aid. A power plant might come with a data sharing clause, a port might double as a security outpost. This is a, it goes on, and I'm not going to read it all. I will share it with you, but it is interesting. Remember the giant eating machine returning home is soon upon us. I think what is slated to happen in the Middle East will be happening. I'm not talking about the next 6 months or 18 months or anything like that, but the infrastructure for another country, another superpower to take over, to step to the fore, is being laid down along with the Belt and Road Initiative projects. Another interesting thing that I saw in the news that you probably all saw was that Britain is going to lower the voting age to 16. And it says it has sparked a debate among lawmakers. And no sooner did this happen on Thursday than the New York Times newspaper came out with this headline: Should teens vote? We examine the voting age around the world. Britain is about to add up to 1.5 million people to its voter rolls. Some lean left, some lean right, and others don't care about politics at all. But all of them are 16 or 17 years old. Liberals are thrilled with the plan, which lawmakers announced yesterday. Conservatives are outraged. In planning to lower the national voting age before the next general election, Britain joins a small but growing club of nations willing to test the boundaries of electoral inclusion. Brazil, an early adopter, cut its voting age to 16 in 1988. Austria, Argentina, and Malta followed suit in the 2000s. Most recently, Germany and Belgium decided to let 16 and 17-year-olds vote in some elections, but not others. Beneath these changes lies a fundamental question: at what age does civic responsibility begin? Today, I explain the debate and look at how it is reshaping some democracies, including America's. So the article goes on to tell us about developmental psychology and that research shows that by age 16, most adolescents can make informed voting decisions. I don't really follow the news as slavishly as I could, but there was an interesting comment in the book club discussion today where one gentleman said that he had actually not watched mainstream media in about 15 years. He said, okay, well, maybe a little bit, maybe 5 hours. So think about 5 hours in 15 years, and truthfully, he hasn't watched or listened to mainstream media. So that allows your thinking to go in a lot of different directions. When you tune that out, you aren't going to be colored by what is around. So I don't watch so much or listen to so much, but I do get a lot of things from my brothers and other family members, and I try to listen more than talk, so that I can learn. And one of them was discussing the lowered voting age. And one brother had been at another brother's house, staying there for 2 or 3 days earlier in the week. And that brother is into a Disney show called Andor. And Andor, I'm getting all of this from my brother, so if I mess it up, sorry. Andor is it's political, and it's really taking the Star Wars mythology and putting it into a television show. And I don't know anything about it, so that's as much as I can say, except that the brother said, in Andor, many of the political leaders that you see are very young, including teenagers. So policy making and and election policymaking and politics is there are a lot of lots of teenage representation. And my brother mused, I wonder if they are normalizing the idea that teens should be involved in politics. And then he mused further about the second round of Star Wars movies. Now, I think I may have commented before that the Star Wars movies from the late 70s were amongst my least favorite sci-fi film series. I wasn't that interested in them. So I certainly wasn't going to watch the second round of them. But he told me that in that, there is an actress who stars in the what they call the prequel trilogy. And you may have seen this actress, Natalie Portman. She was in V for Vendetta, and so she's a recognizable face. And in this series, she played a queen, really, I think is what my brother was saying. But she ended up being a senator. I don't know if she was living some kind of a double life or I don't know. But she was a teenage senator. So there you go. They're definitely familiarizing us with the idea that children should vote and they should participate in politics. And I started thinking about things like the mind of young people. My brother made a good comment that young people don't have wisdom and they don't have a lot of knowledge because they don't have life experience. They really just have the sheltered environment of going from their family's home to the sheltered environment of the school, where unfortunately a lot of them are getting quite a bit of programming. So they lack the experience. And this is coming from my brother, who is, you know, he votes and he participates in the voting system and follows politics fairly closely, but saying that it's not something that young people should participate in. And there were several things that I was thinking about is that besides the fact that they're sheltered and often come from, you know, heavily indoctrinated backgrounds and don't have the experience to figure out for themselves what might be true or even true for them because they haven't lived that. But also, they are really still at an age where their parents should be protecting them. And it also begs the question of if the parents can't because they are legally able to, you know, the age of sexual consent in the U.S. in many states is 16, that can easily be lowered by a year or two, whenever the time is right, and it will be things like studies show. Children are developing, you know, studies can show anything. So they're reaching the age of puberty on average 11 months earlier now than they did 12 years ago, whatever. You know, this is what studies can show. So the protections are removed and the children enter into an equal position with their parents, with their teachers, and so forth. And this is just another example of children and young people. This is from the Boston Herald health section. The emotional toll of climate change is broad-ranging, especially for young people. A daily grind of climate anxiety and distress can lead to sleeplessness and inability to focus and worse. Anxiety, grief, anger, fear, helplessness. And the emotional toll of climate change is broad-ranging as well. That's a repeat there. Many worry about what the future holds, and a daily grind of climate anxiety and distress. Good grief, how much are they going to repeat? You see, this is for children. I told you to go to your room. Go to your room. Okay, some young people wonder whether it's moral to bring children into the world. Many people grieve for the natural world. Activists, climate psychologists, what a sham, pathetic, ridiculous thing that is, and others in the fight against climate change have a range of ways to build resilience and help manage emotions. And then they give you some ideas how to deal with this. Well, I'll give you an idea. Stop lying. You know, tell people the truth. Quit this. So, climate anxiety. And I have talked to young listeners to Alan Watt who I'm not sure if they're questioning whether it's moral to bring children into the world, but they're describing themselves as antinatalists, antinatalism. Quick look here. Antinatalism is the philosophical value judgment that procreation is unethical or unjustifiable. Antinatalists thus argue that humans should abstain from making children. Some antinatalists consider coming into existence to always be a serious harm. So, you know, that makes me sad. That makes me sad. But again, this climate anxiety, and when I'm comparing young people to mature adults, you know, young people have anxiety. They have climate anxiety. And sometimes we hear the term existential threat, you know, or an existential crisis. It's an existential, life crisis that you're having. And I was pondering on that today, you know, what is existentialism? And I can't tell you deeply all of the philosophies that comprise existentialism, but it's this idea that life is absurd or meaningless, or it's, you know, incomprehensible. And how do you live a life in that? And one idea that I have also heard recently more being used is the idea that we should live authentic lives. So people are struggling to find authentic lives in, you know, some existential soup. And how can you have an authentic life? How can you come into consciousness, understand what your values are, and then live in a way that is, you know, so-called authentic to your values if you've been lied to your whole life? It's impossible to be authentic or to find authenticity in an existential crisis when the whole construct is a giant lie. Whereas mature adults, even though we all suffer from this same indoctrination, oh yeah, for sure, it gets stepped up or it gets tweaked or, you know, improved or changed out every few years, but we've all come out of that. We've all lived with that. And yet the difference for a mature adult is my anxiety, if I ever have it, is not existential. It's not free-floating. It's there are mature adult concerns that might cause me anxiousness. Can I pay the rent or the mortgage? Can I pay my taxes? If you have children, can I feed and clothe my children? Can I protect my children? These are authentic anxieties. They're not existential. And the poor young children who have been brainwashed since they walked into their kindergarten, this is all real. And the unauthentic unreality of their climate anxiety and other free-floating, just barely post-pubescent worries, they've not had the time to replace those with real-life concerns. So it's easy pickings for people who want to use them for a system. And finally, I'll touch on just two other quick things. Speaking of climate anxiety, someone sent me this link. It is someone by the name of Benny Johnson talking to Lee Zeldin. And Lee Zeldin is the head of the Environmental Protection Agency in the US, the EPA. He's a Trump appointee. He is a politician, and he's very much a Trump politician. But here he's coming out. He says, yes, the government controls whether we're playing God. So he's talking about geoengineering and that we need to have a discussion about it. It needs to stop. We're being given the arguments that are acceptable. He even more or less said that this is how we talk about this. So yes, it's interesting. I think some of us would say that we'd never thought we'd live to see the day when chemtrails and geoengineering would be discussed at all by the head of any government agency. So there's that. But the parameters of discussion are narrow, and I think it's going to be the same. It's being set up so that if you talk about it this way, that's acceptable. But if you go that way, that's still a conspiracy theory. And it's interesting, though. Just set that one aside for a moment and go over to Epstein and the continuing saga that Trump is, insulting his supporters and telling them to grow up and get over it. It's a giant Democratic hoax. They've been hoaxed. He promised them for years those files would be released, but now it's all a giant hoax. And very few people are asking the question, although I heard from my brother who follows the news that Tucker Carlson had a long, more than 2-hour discussion on how intelligence agencies, the Mossad, namely the Mossad, was behind this operation. And of course, I mean, and I say, of course, that is true. It has to be true. We don't talk that much about it. It's going to be the list, the list, the list, the list. And I'm going to give you a couple of articles here. One of them comes from the J Feed, which is Israel News, Jewish World. I'm not exactly. Anti-Semitism. It's the J feed. And the second one is coming from Times of India, Epstein Files. What is the Mossad agent's conspiracy theory, right? And why Israel's ex-PM Naftali Bennett strongly denies it. So if you talk about what should be pretty darned obvious, you're definitely a conspiracy theorist. But this is the only part of the Epstein story that merits talking about are the intelligence agencies behind them and how disgusting this is. And of course, those at the very top know that this has been going on forever. I'm just going to share one little line that I thought was especially humorous from the J Feed article. About midway down the J Feed article, that the claims that Epstein worked for Mossad may not be entirely far-fetched, but they probably aren't the real story. So the Times of India is giving us this just crazy far-out conspiracy theory. The J Feed is taking a different angle, and they go on to tell you how the handlers to Epstein were probably closer to home. It probably isn't Israel and so forth. But this one was pretty classic, and I thought I would share it with you. But there's a flaw in the theory that the FBI or CIA used Epstein's ties to Israel via Ghislaine Maxwell to mask their own agenda. That would imply that someone within Israeli intelligence was aware of and potentially benefited from Epstein's access to Clinton. With all due respect to the USS Liberty incident and the Jonathan Pollard affair, serious as they were, and now this part is in bolded, so it's been bolded, Israel would never willingly assume the literally catastrophic risk of being directly involved in an operation to spy on a sitting U.S. president. The risk is too high, and the Israelis are too intelligent to even dare. Not in a world where the fallout could shatter its standing with its sole strategic ally. That was so ironically rich to me. I thought for a moment I might be reading The Onion. So I think that's enough chatter from me. I will be giving you the first part of this talk from Alan, and I don't think I'm going to be able to illustrate this very much. By the time you get to that disclaimer, you'll have already noticed that. But I have a few things going on in my personal life that have been demanding of my time and attention. And don't worry, I'm okay. Everyone's okay, but I'm just kind of involved this week. And I thank you for your support. Those of you who donate and who contribute, who subscribe to Substack, who order Alan Watts' work. This was a kind of a disheartening week. I didn't have much. I think I got one letter in the mailbox, which is CTTM PO Box 815 Keene. That's K-E-E-N-E, Texas 76059, USA. And I like to hear from you, even if there is no donation or order included. I enjoy hearing from you. And apologies again that I can't keep up. I can't reciprocate too well. But I do like to hear from you. I appreciate your support. I very much do. Take care and have a good week. And fingers crossed that the audio quality is better and continues to not present problems. Take care.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 6th of September, 2020. And again, of course, I always ask that you hold on to your sanity as we go through these times. Again, I was just thinking before I started yapping away there about the Matrix movie and how it gave you an idea of a system that coexists within another system. And it's all manufactured by outsiders, you would say, to serve their own purpose, where people really are raised to be batteries because you take energy from the people to run the whole system in the Matrix. And it's not too far from the truth in a certain way, an analogy, because everything comes from us. You know, you take all these multi-billionaire corporations, even trillionaire ones they have today, and they really do have multi-trillionaires at the very, very top. And all the money comes from us. You know, whatever is made by labor of all kinds and raw resources. So they take over raw resources of the world to make their products and so on. And including the food, I've mentioned this so many times before, their food supply is run by only a handful of international corporations, the bulk of your food supply. More so now than ever is they've made a big grab for it during the COVID front. You know, it's a front. That's what COVID is. It's an excuse under a wartime scenario to take over and change the whole system on behalf of those who already really rule it. And make it more efficient for them. And that's what it's all about. So really, as I say, we are still batteries in a way. We consume because we're alive, naturally. Our basic needs have to be met at the very least. And even to your heating in the winter or cooling in the summer, if you live in a hot climate, all depends on energy. Again, technocracy that was founded on controlling and running and owning the energy supply of the planet. The humans need to survive by those who decide that they had the right to rule all. It's more true than you think, as I say, with The Matrix. And in The Matrix 2, in the movies, which are awfully entertaining too, you have all kinds of areas in The Matrix with different characters that are like the major domos of their particular area. And you have the keymaster type thing, the locksmith, and all kinds of real good characters that are enjoyable in a sense for being the ultra bad guys. And they can lock you in or out of their particular areas, in fact. Very much like the system in which we live. When you really realize that the world it has many compartments, like the WTO, the World Trade Organization, the World Economic Forum, that really is all part of the same structure, in fact. And they decide what the UN is going to be doing and what countries are going to be doing and what all the economies are going to be or not to be doing and how we're going to live. We call it a democracy, but a democracy has got nothing to do with it. If anything, it's a scientific oligarchy at the top, or near the top, at least serving the dominant minority, as Aldous Huxley mentioned in his own talks. And that's how it really is run. And it's been that way for an awful long time. For the people who really thought about democracy and really believed in it, I feel sorry at times. Because it's like giving you some... And it's a religion, really, isn't it? It's like communism as a religion. You have to really believe in it to make it work to any extent at all. Which generally means the populace has to give up all their rights and freedoms and even sacrifice and go into austerity for the greater good for something way down in the future, which they'll never see and never will see because it's not meant to actually appear ever. That's the trick of all working together for a better tomorrow. It's been done for an awful long time, of course, through the Soviet system and their bloc and in communist China. And communist China is interesting because, again, you have a different culture, a very ethnocentric culture, very proud of themselves, too. They haven't had decades of being taught at university that they're bad and evil, and so they have no shame and no guilt for anything, you see. So they're very proud in their system. And they obey it very well. They are more of a collective society. I might put up tonight, actually, an article. I don't know how I came across it, but it was to do with the Silk Road. You've heard about the big Silk Road idea that, again, the World Trade Organization and the World Economic Forum have been pushing for years. A massive transportation system right from Russia all through right through Europe and even having a spin-off part, a little circular part in Spain, and they've designated Spain to be a multicultural society, a kind of hub for the future, and they've been working on that. And by the way, that's also part of the reason that China's been pushing into the borders of India, because they want to bring in the road through there. For those who are wondering why it's all about the skirmishes I've been having with China, that's part of it. And the media knows it, but the media are not there to inform you about anything. They're meant to get emotional reactions from you and to see if you'll swallow the lies they keep telling you, especially with the COVID that's going on right now. So, as I say, The Matrix is a system where you get your eyes opened with each room that you walk into. Or go through the doors, depends, you know, what kind of entrance you want for the audience. But It's quite interesting to see the different. It's not just levels on a horizontal plane, but it's also a vertical, and you can go up and up and up to whole new levels of it, and so on and so on and so on. But the idea is, it takes off really from the system in which we live, which is we are economic units, so we produce things. We're also energy in ourselves. And from it, you'll always have a dominant minority that suck from us and even force systems upon us, which we will often adapt and adopt very quickly, but adapt into very quickly as well. And look at the internet. Well, even with radio and television, these are like wonders to the world when they first came out in radio, let alone, you know. And I really mean this because it's true. It was a miracle in its day and age when radio came out. And I can remember my dad talking about the old crystal sets. And the crystal sets literally were because everything is oscillators to do with radio or even basic television as well. You had oscillating frequencies. And you have a little oscillator inside your set or your radio or whatever. And if you can tune it to the same frequency as an incoming frequency, then it develops into audio, basically, through a bunch of circuitry. But anyway, in the old days, the people could get crystal sets, as they called it. Small units, and some of them were kind of portable, but you needed a long antenna to pick up the signal. And the antenna was really just, it's a roll of copper wire, very thin copper wire generally. And my dad mentioned it when he was young, and he was with some of his buddies in a little housing outway scheme. And one of them had a crystal set out the back garden. And and it was a big thing, you know, as youngsters, especially boys too, are interested in all kinds of things, of technology and so on. So they got it going, and they put a little earphone on to listen to it because it didn't have a built-in speaker, and they all had turns in it. And one of the little boys, these are boys about 8 or 9, huh? And one of the little boys looks, he said, well, where does it come from, this signal? And they said, oh, this is London, it's BBC London. And he looked and he saw the wire disappearing round the house, the side of the house. He says, "My, that must be a really long wire," because that's how children see things, you know. And technically, it was logical as well for a young child to think that way. It was, oh, that's an awful long wire. He didn't know that it didn't go right to the station. It just picked up the signals from the air. But that's what technology is, and people went crazy with radio. I think the first radio in the States. Our station in the States played music, and it played kind of country music at the time in the States, but it also was set up by real estate. Some guy who was into real estate so they had the first advertising on radio, and that really took off, as we all know. And then along came television, and television was there a long time ago. In fact, pre-World War II, John Logie Baird in Scotland, for those who don't know, it had colour televisions, flat screen. Big ones too, before the World War II broke out. It almost gave you an idea that it was a fairly recent invention, but it's really much older, because he'd been making TVs for long before that. But technology, again, is power, isn't it? It's got the power to change society for those who want to change it, which gives them a power to change it. And the trick, again, is like the internet, is to get you to purchase everything yourself that they need for all information, because then they can control information. And most folk never figure out, they really don't, just like the television, they never know, they never really figure out the TV's not there really to entertain them. Entertainment is just, it's like the cheese in a mousetrap, you know. That's really what it is. The real purpose of it is very, very different. It's to standardize opinion and thought of society, no matter what society it is. And it's all arranged by experts and professionals to also change your behavior. That's one of the main things, is behavior change. And we have lots of information on that from many, many authors in the past and people who investigated it all, and people who are involved in changing societies as well. And again, Aldous Huxley, who was definitely up there with the big think tanks in his day, and who belonged to a family that was part of the Darwin-type clan, and intermarried with them. In fact, eventually, some of the members did anyway. The Huxleys were well involved with those who were changing and directing the thoughts and behaviour of societies. He admitted that himself. He said, "We're part of the, my family's part of the scientific elite who work for the dominant minority." And they work with academia as well. And it isn't just technology, it's also psychology and behaviorism and how to alter the behavior and thoughts of whole populations of people. What you're living through today is tremendous, massive psychological warfare like we've never seen it before, really. We didn't even have this kind of psychological warfare during World War One or Two, or even through the Vietnam era either. This is a big push for the planet. This is world war. This is real world war. And it's psychological warfare backed up with military type force through the police. The police are a force now. They're an internal force with a uniform, like any military. And they're generally armed in most countries. Not all, but most of them. And the ones who are not armed are often trained in the use of it, so they can arm them very quickly if they have to. So you're living through a world war, and this war is the culmination of many years, many, many years. You might even say centuries in a sense, to a very real sense, to bring in a technologically controlled society by the use of technocracy, specialists and experts in every possible area who are going to rule your lives. They're already doing it, and they've got power to do it now. But they want the right to literally not just start off as a child with children like they have in Scotland with Girfec and parts of England too and other countries too, with different names of advocating government agents and social workers to work with children from birth right through, no matter about ethical parents or not. It's to do with modifying the thoughts of the child as they grow up to suit the agenda of those who rule you and own your countries. That's what it's about. Always under a great guise. What's for the greater good again? And there'll be no animosity from people or different ethnic groups or so. Well, just get rid of all that damage. That's what they claim, but it's a big, big lie because, as you well know, not every ethnic group has been subject to the same incredible indoctrination and standardization. Huh? Those at the top of the world, I've mentioned it before, and some, even, again, some recent talks as well, but even many, many years ago when I talked about psychopathy, and some people wrote books about psychopathy, and were good enough to mention me in their books, is where they got a lot of the information from. But psychopathy is so interesting, because when you really meet a real psychopath, you might not catch on quickly, you know. They like to often boast if they've been caught at something. Even in prison, some intelligent ones will often boast about what they did. They like attention. However, if they're not caught and they're working freely in society, most folk often can't quite figure them out. Women will often pick up fellas or get picked up by fellas or whatever, and they'll pick up fellas that they feel sorry for. Or they just need a bit of help. I'm the person to put them in the straight and narrow and fix them up. You know, maybe it's a maternalistic instinct, who knows? But the fact is, or maybe it's just plain ego. But it often ends in disaster if it's a psychopath they're picking up. Because psychopaths, on the low level, the low scale of things, the kind that just see something in a window and want it, they're not the brightest type on the low level, but they still have the incredible instincts of reading people and using them and manipulating. But they're also the kind that throw bricks into the window and grab the stuff and make off with it, and then they get caught and they're now a prison for their whole lives. But as you go up the ladder, and I think the studies that were done in the US and in Britain, maybe in the 30s and 40s, were catching on slowly because there was such a class distinction back then too. It was very overt, in fact. It's still there today, but it was very overt back then when they really thought most psychopaths were just working class types and unemployed types as well. until they started to realize that, no, there's a lot more in the upper strata, the middle and upper strata. And that's when they went into, eventually, it took them a long time to get round to the CEOs of corporations and the big players in corporations that get up there and become the heads of even the military-industrial complex, you know. And then you find out that those who run the world financially, again, the dominant minority, you know, a hereditary group, will employ these psychopaths and put them in place as CEOs. These are intelligent type psychopaths. They're more savvy as to what's going on, and they're careful not to, to end up afoul of the law if possible. But they're dedicated psychopaths. If you pay them well, they'll serve you well. And then they form clubs with them too, and they can join certain clubs and very important type. They may even get knighted, some of them. A lot of them actually did in the past. If you look at the people who got knighted in Britain for the last maybe 150 years, most of them were merchant bankers and people like that, who believe you me, in business, in real tough business, nice folk just don't get ahead. It doesn't happen that way. They'd be ruthless. And there are folk who are psychopaths, who definitely are ruthless, who are very successful in the business world by being ruthless and by, again, lending to governments. Like, that's how often Britain knighted them and gave them their, in return for it, they'd end up being up there amongst the lords and ladies, and they'd intermarry each other, you see. So the psychopaths marrying into the psychopathic realm have a good chance, especially in the lifestyle and the culture within the family groups, of raising a good psychopath to take over. Intergenerational psychopathy, see? Very important. And all countries have it too. So when you realize the world's run by this kind of system, and then in a technological sphere, and those who are really into technology, who run the electronic systems of today and these massive empires of bits and bytes, etc., and Silicon Valley types, you'll find a lot of them are actually geeks. And their world is what they do, and why they're doing it. They're kind of far removed from the emotions, the normal emotions that folk... Have you noticed that with them? It was often thought a lot of them were almost autistic, Asperger types. And some of them may very well be, that they don't seem to get on very well with people. And they have no qualms about working with the NSA and organizations like that, where they have no right to be in folks' lives in the first place, electronically destroying privacy and invading it further and further and further, and other ones as well that work to design the next part of the cultural change as you get turned into slaves. Obviously slaves, you have no free, you really don't have much free will left at all, you know. When choices in important areas are taken away from you, including using cash, for instance, this is an example. The roads are being narrowed. All the accessory roads that join the main road are being stopped and walled off and are taken away or filled in, and you're left with this one road that you must be on. And the same with medicine and choices and everything else, or vaccinations or whatever it happens to be. When you don't have any choices, you're under a tyranny, a totalitarian tyranny, which will convince most folk that that's for your own good. And most folk, unfortunately, because the indoctrination is so perfect, they don't shout at people as they're persuading you. They're professional persuaders. That's what good psychopaths can do, by making things appear very plausible. You know? And most folk want to go along with it because they don't want to believe the world's rather nasty or it's cruel. Because as I've said before, regardless of the century we live in, basically we're all kind of tribal. We're all born in little tribes sometime in the past, maybe 1,000 and 2,000 or more years ago. It doesn't make any difference. And in a tribal situation, children, they want to feel secure inside the tribe. And it's expected the elders take care of them and warn them and protect them and so on. So, yeah, you might even leave home now at 15 or 16 if you want to. But the fact is, it's still in your nature. to be protected by those who are more mature, the real role models. And so the real people have been displaced in today's technology with propaganda, rather perfect propaganda and perfect indoctrination through schooling, you know. So they're taught to be naive, stay naive, and the authorities, the experts, are in charge of it all, and just follow them, be obedient to them, because they're there to protect and help you. And that's the sort of mirage cover that they take upon themselves and project to you. You don't see them as they really are. You don't see the characters sitting at big board meetings talking about their multi-billion-dollar profits for giving you a flu shot for the year, for the nation or a few nations together. You don't see them meeting with members of parliaments or governments across the world, or the World Trade Organization, or again, the World Economic Forum, or Gavi, or all these private institutions that they pretend they're philanthropies. They've got massive shares in the big vaccine companies, you know, who also lobby governments, so the governments will take their vaccines that they'll manage to provide. And they all profit from it, of course. And that's just one example. If they could make you just dress in the same uniform, a uniform that was made by one factory for the whole planet, and then they all looked the same, except for maybe degrees of superiority, you know, there's always some kind of superiority, and then they would do it, and they'd force you all to wear it, and they'd say it, well, because the material is meant to keep you safe from scratches and so on, from outside things and objects, then it's going to cost you about $5,000 each, so you'd be forced to pay it. They would do that if they could get away with it. Yes, they would. You better believe they would. Look at all the gadgetry they've come out with recently. Since the COVID idea. I saw something the other day, I think it was in China, where they had children sitting, again, with their mandatory, like 2 meters apart desks. And they had these plastic shrouds over. I don't know where the air came in from, but they had shrouds over them, you see, and utter farcical things like that. And one I saw was good a few months ago there. It was a guy who took it to the next level, and he got an air filter from a car's intake. And again, it's very good, actually. I mean, in reality, it'd be pretty good if you needed it, which you don't. It really is like a HEPA filter. It's so fine to keep all dirt particles out from the carburetor or the intake for the air, for the fuel. And he had it on his head, and he had a good chromed top on it. I don't know if he screwed it onto his head or not, but anyway, he had these tubes coming out of it, one to his mouth and a mask, and another one for an expulsion valve to let the air out. So I guess he could patent that. Maybe some corporation is already doing it, and we all walk around like that for the rest of our lives, eh? Because that's what it's come down to, utter farce that we've never seen before. And I knew this stuff was coming, because I'd given talks back in the 90s on the incredible psychological studies that had already been done on us. And other authors, long before even Quigley came out in the 50s and 60s on television, talking about the studies on the public that were pretty well perfected. And they knew that using techniques back then, they could really drastically and very quickly alter human behavior and make us do things that perhaps we oughtn't to do, or think, or make us accept things that we shouldn't accept. That was way back then. But today, it's massive. I mean, your own tax money throws millions and billions across the world to these other think tanks and study groups and universities that all do these joint projects with those that eventually grab the patents, whatever they discover, and techniques. They have patents on techniques, by the way, for those who don't know it, on ways to manipulate you. And they do it, and it's very, very effective, incredibly effective. When you understand that most folk will take the path of least resistance at all times. Even though it's like one of those children's mazes you used to get with a little ball on it, and you go through the maze and you held it in your hand and you'd turn it left and right and up and down that to make the ball travel in the direction that you wanted it to go. But it was just like a little maze. And most folk will go along it and take the easiest route. Even though at the end, if you had a little hammer at the end, a little toy hammer would come along and just pop up through a spring and smash the ball, right? They would still go along that same path, left, right, left, right, left, right, until they get to the end, because it was easier to go that way. That's what people do. Even if you warn them, if they keep going the way they're going, they're done for. They'll still do it. I mentioned it before, there's a freezing of the mind comes into play when real danger starts to seep into your mind that you might be done for. And with some folk, it's paralytic. With a lot of folk, actually, it's paralytic. This cannot be happening in real life to me. We live in a civilized society, etc., etc., etc. And we know the Soviets killed millions of people. And the Bolsheviks, the slaughters was incredible. They still know that there's massive, massive fields in different parts of the Soviet Union with layers and layers and layers of bodies that were mass executed. This was the People's Army that did it, you know, the People's Army on behalf of the people, you know. As they always take over the same authority. It's for the good of the people, so on behalf of the people, we will execute you. Because you are enemies of the state. You're enemies of the people. You're seeing it emerge today with the COVID thing. You must wear those. You're enemies of the people. You know, you're dangerous to them. And that's a quick judgment and some baton and crashes in the skull. And that's it. That's where you are with this technique. And it doesn't really change too much on that level. But most folk will go quietly to the end without question. That's the sad part. I can't say enough about what happened with the Soviet system, and the Nazis used it again against people who, you know, they saw as enemies of Germany or the people. And the film of folk literally running in, one, you know, like one group after another. It's your turn now. And they'd run into this dug pit, and then they get shot. And down they went, the next group. And as folk watching it, they think, when it comes our turn, it won't happen. That's what you think, you see. And the Soviets were masters. The Soviets actually sent out cards that were delivered to folks' homes by couriers when they came into a new territory and were taken over, the Bolsheviks, you see. And the Bolsheviks were ferocious. They hated everybody, you know, except themselves. They sent out these little cards that were delivered, and when any Poland did the same thing too. And you get a little card, and it'll say, attend so-and-so house, it might be the mayor's house or something that was taken over as a headquarters. And you walk in there, you'd be led, you wouldn't see many folk, it was like crowds of people, and you would just go along a corridor, for instance, and the guy would point there, you'd point in this room, and then you go down the steps in the basement. As you were going through the basement, they'd shoot in the back of the head, and that was it. Very efficient, and they had pulleys in the whole bit, would just drag the bodies up through the coal chutes, and then they would dump them into, there's even old film with this stuff, you know. Very efficient it was, but every person, they think, well, if they sent for me, they want to talk to me. That's the first thing, because you will not think the worst, you see. They want to talk to me. And away you go, and you never get anybody to talk to, because eventually you get shot in the back of the head as you've just passed another door. That's what happens. But the same thing with these big pits that they dug in Kachin, you know, there's another one too. Incredible horror story there as well. And another, like Bulgaria had it too, fantastic videos of survivors of some of these camps that did work with the slaughtered bodies of their compatriots, and horrific, horrific things. This is what totalitarian society brings to you. What we're going into now, though, you see, is persuasive techniques. I mentioned before with that movie that was it Saving Private Ryan, where Tom Hanks, I think, goes, he's in a war movie, but he's looking for his brother or something, but I can't remember the whole thing. But anyway, there's a scene where they actually come across, the American troops come across some Germans. One of them started firing at them, they catch him alive, they decide not to execute him, and he gives them some, again, a good psychopath too, he gives them some spiel. And then they kind of let him go. But he, down the road, they meet him in a town. He'd gone to a town and met some other Germans, and they'd taken up positions to defend the place. And the Americans came in, And one of the Americans goes up a bell tower, I think it was. And at the very top of the bell tower, who's waiting there is the same German that let go before, who's a good talker, a good con man. And he's trying to press this blade, this knife, into this American soldier. He's lying on top of the soldier. He said, just stop struggling. Don't struggle. He's not shouting at him. He's just speaking to him. It'll be all over very quickly, and all the problems will be gone, and it'll be quite peaceful. Well, that's what you're getting right now, folks, with scientific persuasion. Same thing. Huh? Leave it to the experts. They know what's best for you. They got your best interests at heart, honestly. You know it, don't you? And they're well-trained, and they understand these things. They had articles, remember, in the paper recently, in newspapers, don't even question things, just leave everything, don't think too deeply, but leave it to the experts. This was the headline, you know. Well, here you are with it all, and your governments are all on board with it, because are you surprised? Do you really think the politicians are ever real? Politicians are low-level psychopaths. They're quite happy to be the masters and be given extra whatever it is, cash, residences, nicer residences, and honours and stuff like that. They're very happy with that. Because our societies are incredibly corrupt, and they've been incredibly corrupt for an awful, awful long time. It's normal now. They're really, really, really badly corrupt too. So now, what you're living through now is a managed horror show, disguised with hygienic white face masks on people with white coats, you see, in hospitals and things like that. That's managed that way. The common enemy, again, the enemy of the people, is a COVID, you know, like a coisa. Coisa's a COVID type as well. It's a cold, common cold. But this one's a SARS type, right? And most folk literally are already immune and don't even know they've had it, you see? And that's the way these things generally work. Never mind all the lying, I'll touch on it later, the lying statistics, etc., that are now being unearthed, admitted to it reluctantly and all. It makes no difference, though, because the agenda must continue. Because what you're living through today is the culmination of a plan that was set up years and years ago, so that those who already ruled the world, this is their revolution, this is the next part of their revolution, to bring it into the more controlled technocratic system, the efficient system that will suit their agenda for themselves at the top. That's what it's for. You realize, getting back to the Matrix, where you're a battery, your energy is what it all runs on, is your energy. You're a slave, you see, for your energy. It's not far-fetched from where we are now, because the elite have decided that they're going to bring in the new system. You're not going to get asked if you like it or not. It's already here. They used 9/11 to take away all your rights, not just in the US, but across the planet. That's where there's a big warning that went off then, you know, alarms went off with 9/11. It wasn't just the fact that the towers inside the US came down. A whole different story regardless of what caused it or whatever. But the fact is, that's what happened. You saw, right? They're gone with folk in it. But why would the whole world go under a new type of anti-terrorism? The whole planet, pretty well. And immediately, all the predictions of the military-industrial complex from the 80s and 90s, I've got old articles from way back, I mean, in real copy, hard copy, right? Where they said, what will we do in a world of peace, you know? The military-industrial complex, you know? Well, surveillance of the citizenry will be the whole new thing, security and surveillance and anti-terrorism. They knew about this a long, long time ago. And that's where it would... Well, how would you change a society where you're not under constant monitoring by the elite that own you, as far as you're concerned? Well, you need something to happen, right? And, of course, the PNAC group, the Project for New American Century, drew up the whole list of countries they wanted to take out anyway, because they had a different agenda from average Americans. But they also wanted to introduce an anti-terrorism idea. They would start selling total security measures and surveillance on all citizenry in the US and outside the US as well. And Britain was in on the act too, naturally, you know, London. I hate saying Britain, because the British folk are as defenseless as the rest of us. You know. The terms, remember, today are real corporate names. That's what these places, they're corporation names. And London has controlled what was became Britain and the UK for an awful long time. It still does. But yeah, this is total surveillance of every citizen. And with COVID, oh my good, we'll go to the next level now. All the talk and all the preparations to bring in the smart cities by the World Economic Forum, right? The WEF, and the World Trade Organization, all these organizations, it's already one club. It's one club, actually. And most of the members of one belong to the other as well. This is how it works, you see. Circles within circles, as Quigley talked about. Carl Quigley it was. And that's what you have, interconnecting circles. Just like the symbol, by the way, of the Olympics. That's what you're seeing there. See how they connect? And that's a symbol, the five, of course, it's always the five points and so on, that interconnect that way. And that's how you do it. You need five of them for different parts of controlling society. That's what it stands for. And so they direct the future. They train the public to be terrified through terrorism, anti-terrorism, and now it's terrorism part two with COVID, you see. And then of the smart cities are going to be up and running very shortly. We didn't get to vote on any of that either, by the way. It was all set up again with the same characters, with Facebook participating, and Google, the massive Google intelligence network, setting up a good part of it too, and Alphabet agencies, etc., to bring in this wonderful system of total surveillance. From birth to death, 24 hours a day on every individual, outside your home or inside your home. That's what's in the smart hubs and all the rest of it. And again, lockdowns. And if you're a bad boy or girl, you see, and you've been naughty, and you haven't taken your latest vaccination, which is a whole list of stuff they want to give you now. I'll touch on that later. And I touched on this back in the 90s. Again, to me, everything's like repetition. But yeah, they'll simply lock you down at home. They don't have to give you an excuse. Well, but it's been reported that you've been in the vicinity of a person who had a sniffle, you know. And it's just like getting banned off the different social media. They don't have to give you any reason for it, you see. You're under these are totalitarian tyrannies. They make themselves, they make their institutions that belong to the elite, you see, they make them necessary to survive in today's economy, as an example. And everything, like I said, to talk years before I had a computer, I still was giving talks, on other folks' shows and so on. And I said, everything on the computer will be free, on your internet will be free for a long time. And to get you in on it, and there's lots of pornography, they kept telling you that in the newspapers to make sure everybody just dived into it. And folk did, you know. And I says, I'll be free, and the YouTubes will be free, and everything's free. And then they start taking it all away from you. And once you're familiar with using it all, you'll go along with it anyway, and you might even pay to continue, because now it's part of your... You adapt very quickly into systems. They know this. And people literally... it's like political parties. If Dad and Grandpa was in the Labour Party in Britain, then often you'll be the same. Even if you're not in the working class anymore, that's how it works. Folk don't change so quickly unless it's done through terror and fear. You see, then they'll change very quickly indeed. They have to, because everything's been let loose with the terror. You know, if you understand what I'm talking about. So you better get changed. That's how things really work, and most folk go along with it. It works on most folk very quickly. And getting back to the folk running into mass pits to be executed, you can actually see the old footage on this, if you want to see it. Remember what Plato said, don't think, don't ever think that somehow you're an advanced civilization. Don't ever think that. We're all the same people as we were thousands of years ago, regardless of the technology. We're the same people. We behave the same way to similar circumstances. Because really, there are not many ways you can react to things as a human. It's either happily, contentedly, quietly, but maybe with a bit of unpleasantness, or maybe with even anger. But it's always simple things you react with, you see, very predictable. And again, most folk will take the path of least resistance, especially now when you have experts convincing you through we used to call it pattern merchants in Britain, a good pattern merchant, someone who could prattle off with a good spiel and convince you, a good salesman, the pattern merchants. They go this way anyway, you see, and especially if they've got a title now, this person is an expert in blah, 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 whatever it happened to be, and folk are trained that way, like Bertrand Russell said. I can't remember, it was the impact of science on society. But he did mention, I actually read it on the air, some of these books years ago. But he mentioned it, yeah, he said the people can be guided into anything. And the children especially, if you get them young, you can nearly use them, you know. I've watched a lot of the symbols, for old occultic symbols being adapted and adopted for political purpose right up to the present time, by the way. It's interesting, even the Extinction Rebellion, folk don't even know where the symbol comes from. But it's right in front of their faces if they want to look at it. But yeah, folk will do what they're told because you've got a global threat, you see. You've got an invisible enemy. It's right off a science fiction movie. And especially all the sci-fis that you've seen for years, you know, the plague, the coming plague, and virus, and lockdowns, all these things they give you as horror movies. And here all is, eh? You're all prepared for it. You've seen it in the movies. You've seen Dustin Hoffman dash about, you know, like a madman trying to save you all in the movie. I can't remember the name of that one, but that was one of the big ones years ago. And here we are, and it's all been managed and worked out. When even, again, the Rockefeller Foundation came out with their big plans in 2010 and put it in there, the lockstep part of their plan, it was only part of it. But and of course, how technology in the future would influence us all and controls. Well, it's all here, folks. This is it, you know. It's all here. This is the people who brought the whole world to a standstill did it deliberately. Partly, they claim, I don't really believe at all, but this part, anyway, they claim that it's another reset, as I say, like the World Economic Forum, this is a reset, you know, the global reset, like the last 2007-2008 crash was a reset. This is the big one now for the whole planet, but not just for money, it's to be a whole new resetting of life existence, right down to the said in their own writings. Because of an intelligence department in the WEF, you can actually see on their website. And when you go in there, you'll see it redefining what a human is right in there too, you see. Now, you thought you were in the sci-fis. These are the guys who create it for real life, real science fiction. And believe you me, there's nothing they can't make happen if you go along with it. By the other token, there's nothing they can get away with if you don't go along with it. I hope you understand that part. Do you really want to go into a brave new world where I mean, the West has already said, and Russell said it too, Bertrand Russell, that the sterilization technique was already working in the West way back in the 50s. And the biggest problem in the West now is, infertility. I used to give the talks on the sperm count plummeting in the Western male. And what got me onto it was, why the interest in universities? Certain universities were given, and it's mainly women, by the way, that were given these tests, to test young men's sperm counts in certain universities. But this, we're farmed. It's the same as our animal husbandry. You've got to know everything about the animals that you own Any changes have to be completely noted. Well, that's us folks, we're all humans. And they would go through all these different reasons for the sperm plummeting until literally, I think they had less than about a quarter of the mobile and motile functioning sperm, spermatozoa, than males had back in the 1950s, they said. Plummeted. And we're not supposed to be worried about that. You see, because they don't tell you why. The reason why they don't say why it's getting caught, because they know what's causing it. It's intentional. You're starting to get the picture. If it wasn't intentional, they would be spending billions of bucks to find out what happened to their animals. So they know what happened to their animals, us, you see. Of course they do. That's the horror show you're living in. It's been going on your whole life long, and you don't know it.